Hey, Podnutsians. Welcome to DDG episode 12. First off, I want to say thanks for the feedback and emails. We will read that here in this episode. Just a really quick update. I will say I went to my doctor here in the last week, and I'll first and foremost say he's a really nice guy. He's a professional. You know, there are good and bad auto mechanics. There are good and bad everything in this world. And he, I think, is a good doctor. I want to say means well. I do know I've seen plenty of studies and stats that say older doctors have a little bit of a harder time breaking out of a groove and realizing some of the more modern things. But I know every time I've given him any kind of information, he has accepted it, went and researched it himself, came back, and we've talked about it. This last appointment, I will say, was a little bit different for me, almost primarily because the appointment was not even until like 5:30 p.m. at night. I expect doctor's offices to be closed by that time, but he was still open. And I found it a little bit weird when I went back and talked to him. I was in like the corner suite, which was like weird. I've never been in that one. It's like three times the size of a normal room. And you know, they took my blood pressure. They, you know, took my temperature, asked me questions. 3 minutes later, he walked in. First thing out of his mouth was, he was very happy with what he's seeing so far. He's happy with how I'm looking, asked me how I felt. And I said the honest truth. I am absolutely exhausted, really tired. Feel like I don't have a lot of energy. But, you know, I guess you'll have that when all of your energy reserves are being burnt off because of being in ketosis. He said, you know, that's not shocking that I say such a thing. He did encourage me multiple times. He thought what I was doing was really good. He liked the numbers. He liked what he saw. When I told him I'm comfortable with this diet and I can do it for the rest of my life kind of thing, trying to say to him, you know, it isn't like I'm fighting every day to stick with this diet. He said, you know, don't stick with this for the rest of your life. Nothing is going to be constant to the day you die. He said, for right now, what you're doing is a benefit to your health. He said, me personally, I wouldn't be so stringent. I wouldn't have such low numbers of sugars and carbs, but it's working for you. You're comfortable with it. I see no ill effects as of right now. So, you know, for now, I say stick with it. He did ask me again about exercise, and I said, you know, I can walk. I said, but I have, you know, damage on outside of both of my ankles. I really need, I believe they're called ankle locks. It's basically like an ACE bandage with metal through it just for support reasons. I really should have at least one of them on my right ankle. It's worse. But I also have a partially torn meniscus, which, you know, on my left knee, which it hurts once in a while badly. And I say that honestly, very conservatively, it hurts. I have slight scoliosis, very slight, very, very slight scoliosis, but I do have back pain basically every day to some degree. As long as I keep moving, it seems like it's not that bad. It's when I have to not move for a given time, like sitting in a car driving is when it hurts. I have shoulder damage. I have a second degree separated right shoulder, which makes any exercise above my head, any lifting, any stretching, really difficult to do. I said, so realistically, doctor, I always call him doc, and I feel like it's so insulting, but I once in a while call him doc, and he doesn't shrug. I said, I really do want to lose at least a little bit more weight before I start doing any actual physical activity, because I feel like my body being damaged to how it is, I feel like I'm really prone to injury. And he said, well, I can understand that. And then he went through, explained to me, which is one of the things I already knew. Saying people need exercise is a very nice way to put it. Exercise, just like diet, just like it is, means something else to everybody else's body. For instance, what I would do and my body would consider exercise, Olympic athletes or athletes of any size wouldn't think it's exercise, and their body wouldn't think it's exercise, because all exercise means is accelerated heart rate for at least 30 minutes. That's the gist of it. That's the 30,000 foot view. And that means different things to different bodies. My body, I'll say right now, is so out of athletic shape. It's not difficult for me to get my heart rate up. All I got to do is walk at a brisk pace and my heart rate goes up. No doubt in my mind, my heart rate goes up because I sweat. And to me, that's an indicator at least of I'm at least approaching legitimate exercise. So what I told him is every day I'm trying to walk at least a couple miles, minimum 2 miles. Most I've done, I think, is like 4, 4.5 miles. And I said, I know it's not much, but I'm at least trying to do something. I don't want to actually go full-fledged onto any exercise regimen until I've lost more weight. So every day, my target is 2 grams of sugar or less, 40 grams of carbs or less. On the average day, I probably eat 5 grams of sugars and 50 to 60 grams of carbs. There are days where I hit those targets, but 2 out of 3 days, I'll say I don't. I go a little bit above it. I'm not an extreme counter. So I really don't even know how much weight I lost. He told me it was over 80 pounds. When I went and got weighed, I was 182. I know I was over 260 this time last year. So 80 pounds is the rough estimate, I'll say. And then we took a advanced blood test where a whole bunch of numbers got checked. And here's the gist of it. The only stuff that I really think matters is cholesterol. Because I'm eating low sugar, low carbs, no fruits, that means I'm going to, I think, in general, bring in a higher intake of either proteins or fats. And fats are a cheap supplement, affordable. To eat pure protein every day is expensive because, you know, meat is expensive. Leaner meat is even more expensive. So I eat more fat, okay? Base cholesterol standard range 0 to 200. I have 204. Triglyceride standard 0 to 150. I have 92. HDL, they want it less than 40. I have 64. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, yeah. LDL cholesterol 0 to 130. I'm at 122. Non-HDL cholesterol calculated 140. I don't know if that's good or not. And my total caloric HDL rate is 3.2. I have no idea if that's good or not. The one that he really cared about was my A1C, which is the advanced glucose test, standard range 4.5 to 6.1. Before I say that, he also asked me if I got a glucose meter. I told him I did. I admitted to him. He told me to buy it 6 months ago. I bought it about 3 months ago. Half the days I come home, I got to fix this kid, this food, that kid, this food, my wife food. I got to do the laundry, do the dishes, you know. I forget half the days. So he asked me what my blood glucose readings were when I did it. I told him the lowest I saw was 7.2. The highest I saw was 107. The majority of the time it was between 88 and 94 is what I'll say. And he was pleased. He said, you know, to get the highest of 107 out of all the days. And he said, that's great. That's perfect. That's where I want you to be. He then asked me if I experienced any low sugar symptoms or whatever, low glucose. And me, stupid, I don't go on WebMD. I want him to tell me this stuff. What he deems important is what I want to know. So I just said, I have no idea what that is. I think I know what it is. He said, well, it's dizziness. It's this, it's that, it's that. And I told him, since he put me on blood pressure meds at least once every month and a half, 2 months, I stand up, I feel dizzy. I sit down, I stand back up, and I'm fine. So I didn't feel any more dizziness, I think, than before that, and no other symptoms that I feel. So he was happy about that as well. Okay, the standard range for A1C is between 4.5 and 6.1. I got 5.3, almost exactly in the middle is what I'll say. Because of this, what I told my wife, because my wife is the most affected by this, and I have no problem saying that. She has been unbelievably supportive of me. I've been trying to feed her pastas, her rices, and she exclaims she doesn't need it. She doesn't need it. When I cook it, she eats it. So I still try to cook it for her, at least when I can. But she also has reduced, at least during dinner time, how much carbs she's eating. I told her about once a week now, I am going to have a burger, or I am going to have, you know, something like that. But I'm not going to go and have a chicken fried steak with a side of mashed potatoes and corn on the cob kind of thing, because that's just sugars and carbs, sugars and carbs. I'm still going to be very attentive to what I eat. I am going to allow myself once every week or two, probably closer to 2 weeks, a day where I have at least one meal that's not extremely stringent. I'm going to be aware of what I eat, but I'm not going to be stringent about it, as stringent about it. My goal is still to have less than 5 grams of sugar a day, less than 60-ish grams of carbs a day. And my goal with that is just to maintain. If I can lose more weight, I can lose more weight. If I can, I can't. I'm trying to talk my wife into getting a pool. She wants one anyway. I know pool exercises are the least damaging to joints and stuff. So we might try to do that. I know it's getting to be the worst time of the year to buy a pool. If we don't do it in the next month and a half, 2 months, it's going to shoot up in price. So we might not do it right now. I will say I understand exercise is important to overall health. But even when I was down in PodFest Orlando, Steve Cherubino looked at me like I was crazy when I said, I don't care about being healthy. All I want to do is be healthier. And he was like ordering a coffee and he looked at me, the hell are you talking about? What do you mean? I said, well, if I wake up every day saying to myself, I have to be healthy, then then at the end of the day, I'm going to probably be disappointed in what I do, you know, most days. I said, so my goal is every day to just focus on being healthier than I was for most of my life. Healthier. Just like I use a electronic vaporizer, quit smoking now 3 years and 2 months. Haven't smoked a cigarette since then. I'm not healthy. I believe I'm healthier. How much healthier is a thing for debate. But to me, there's very little doubt in anyone's mind that I am healthier because I don't smoke cigarettes. The goal isn't to be healthy. I'm not trying to be a Olympic athlete. I'm just trying to be door-to-door geek. You know, a little bit thinner, a little bit healthier, a little bit better prepared for later years of life kind of thing. So it's good news, it's not great news. Now, here's the other thing. I went into the appointment thinking realistically. I don't think a lot of people have the ability, I'll say, to stop and think realistically when they go talk to a doctor. I made it a point to say to myself, if I was in his shoes, what could a patient say to me that would show respect, acknowledgement, and, you know, wanting better for themselves? Because I wanted to get off the meds. I want to get off my diabetes medication, if possible. And I want to get off my blood pressure medication, if possible. Notice the caveats there. I'm not a doctor. I have no medical degree. Neither does my wife or my friends or my family or anyone else trying to tell me I don't need to be on it. So I went into it after he complimented me on the weight, complimented me on my numbers. I said, one thing I would really like is to is if you could tell me a path to getting off the medication. And then he started talking and then he stopped. He said, well, wait, which medication? I said, well, if I could get off both the blood pressure and the diabetes, that would be, you know, great. But this is where I ask you for advisement. What do you think I should do? You know, can I get off of either one of these soon or never or what? Because if he would have said never, I would have respected him for being honest with me. But I would have probably looked for another doctor because there has to be a path to get off. Well, he didn't say never. He said, well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not sure you need to be on any medication right now. He said, with that said, please continue to take your medication. We're going to send you to this one last test that I just told you guys about. He said, and then give me a little bit of time to review the numbers. Give me a little bit of time to look at your chart and I will call you and we can talk about a schedule to get off one of the medications. He said, I never tell people to drop two medications at once. So what I'll probably do is in a week or two, call you up, you drop one of the medications, and then in a week or two, you come in for a blood test. I review those numbers, and then if possible, in a couple of weeks after that, we can look at getting you off both medications. What I didn't tell him is my goal is to hit the age of 50 and not be on any medication, and not to not be on any medication because I don't go to the doctor or because I don't listen to the doctor, but because genuine bona fide medical doctors are telling me I don't need to be on medication. Not that when I hit 50, I'm then going to, you know, drink, smoke, and everything else till I go into the grave kind of thing, but at least I want that soft, achievable target. It's only 5 years away, and for someone old as myself, that's a blink of an eye. It's not far at all. My oldest son will be of old enough to get his learner's permit, and my youngest son will be old enough to have other parents knock on my door wanting to beat me up because my son might be a jerk. I don't know. You know, it's 5 years. The world can change, including myself. So that's the goal. It looks like it's going in the right path. I'm not going to say the diet is easy. I'm not going to say it was a snap. What I'll say is he told me I was diabetic. He told me I was going to be on insulin unless he saw a dramatic change. I know the effects of diabetes. I know some of the things that can happen if you are negligent in, you know, taking care of your diabetes, in quotes. You can lose your feet. You can lose your vision. You can die from it. It's a very painful, slow, methodical death. It is not a quick death. It's a very slow, painful death. And, you know, if I can avoid it, why not? So I eat now eggs and bacon. They're delicious. The salads I eat, I don't have any dressing on salads anytime, and they're perfectly fine. I eat cheese. I eat turkey. It's just a question now of reducing the fat a little bit and raising the proteins and stuff up, and I think I'll be perfectly fine is what I'll say. Time will tell. I will say thanks, people, for the kind words about sticking with the diet. Again, it wasn't something I thought even was a choice. I just did it. We have two emails here. One of them is older that I don't know how I skipped, and the other one is newer. First one is from Rob Mack. I want to say thank you for all the support. Rob's emailed more than a couple times throughout the years. He says, I just wanted you to know that I enjoy your show, or should I say, Podnuts is a refreshing podcast to listen mainly because of how you present things in a non-geeky way. Over the years, I've listened to one podcast or another, and they seem to fall into a couple of categories. First category being a know-it-all, or two, I'm a fluff, look at me. I'm a geek by heart, older than you. I remember loading Linux using 1.44 floppies and having to code drivers. I'm old enough to know someone you have mentioned, Max Monty in Amarillo, before he became a computer geek and was a TSA agent. I'm also old enough to know that I don't know everything, so I listen to your podcast and to keep current. Take care. And see, I hate to say you're exactly right, Rob. I listen to now almost 150 different podcasts. A huge, huge percentage of podcasts that I subscribe to, I near immediately unsubscribe from because of those two things. You either listen to a show where the guy just wants to tout about how smart they are, and the worst show is when you have two or three people and they're all smart, and they just spend the entire show just trying to one-up each other on their knowledge or on their experience. And look what I can do. Look what I can do. Look what I can do. And it just never stops. And they very soon speak over people's heads. That to me is not a good listening show. It's a competitive ego off. The second one is I am fluff and look at me. Yes. Another huge percentage of shows I listen to or have listened to it and then immediately unsubscribe from. The people just want to talk about their great accomplishments. They did this great. They did that great. They did this great. And I just can't listen to them either. I like hearing people from the trenches, people who are real working people, people who enjoy figuring out solutions with either help from somebody or all on their own. People who are part of a community. There's a reason why when I start this podcast, I say, hello, Podnutsians. I was listening to one of the guys in Podfest, and there were a couple people there that were very passionate. And passionate is to me a very, very key word, and it's a word I don't use lightly. There's a couple really passionate people in Orlando there talking about their podcast. And one of them said very clearly, I don't have listeners. I don't have subscribers. I don't have viewers. I don't have patrons. And he just kept going on with all these different words. It's like he had a thesaurus in his back pocket. And he said, I have friends. And, you know, it was like a gong going off in my head. Dong. That's why I say, hello, Podnutsians. I don't consider anybody who listens to this anything less than my equal. I am and have never been any better than anybody else out there. When like Rob takes the time to send me an email, he took the time to send me a friggin' email. Yeah, I am nobody, nobody. And he sat down, he sent me an email. It means a lot to me, which is why I feel like I'm a jerk that I missed his email for almost a solid month. But I answered it, damn it, just took me a month. And Max Monty, Max is just one of those awesome, cool guys. He is so sickeningly busy in his stuff. It really is hard to keep up with him. Once in a while, I get him on Voxer and chat with him, and he just has a million different things going on. To me, that's what Podnuts is. It's just people getting things done and communicating when time permits, learning, sharing, and having fun, because that's the whole thing. When work is work, we don't want to do it. When work is fun, we can't wait to get up and do it again. And, you know, this podcast, Podnuts, 99% of it doesn't feel like work. When I go through emails, it is not work. When I hit record, it is not work. When I chat with Eric or Cody or Brian or anybody else, it is not work. When I have to, you know, edit the shows, it is not work. When I have to work on the website, it is not work. And when I answer emails, it is not work. When I have to do the numbers, that's work. I don't like doing it. But for the most part, it ain't work, because I'm communicating with friends. I'm communicating with people who are my equals, and it's a really good feeling. And when I put in for my talk at PodFest next year, I'm pretty sure the talk is going to be focused on community, friends, passion. Those three things, either one or two of them will be the main point, but that is really what podcasting is, whether you're podcasting or YouTubing or Instagramming or anything else, whatever. If you're doing it to try to become an influencer and make money, then for the most part, people like me look at people who do that as nearly scum of the earth. True influencers never sit down and think, you know, I think I should be an influencer. Heroes of war don't try to go out and be heroes of war. Great men of history don't go out to be great men of history. Great scientists, you know, I don't think they go out with the idea of changing the world. They go out with the idea of, I want to figure this out. I want to do this one little thing. It's a passion that drives people. So when I hear people talking about becoming influencers, how to make money with X, it sounds more like a job, and jobs ain't fun. Jobs are jobs. So Podnuts is a life. It's a friendship. It's a community. Hello, Podnutsians. Next email is from Todd. Todd said, hey, Dor, and Todd's a longtime AAA emailer. He says, hey, Dor, just wanted to let you know that I listened to DDG number 11 yesterday, and it was fabulous. I have to say that you're really inspirational with your efforts at combating your diabetes issue. I also really appreciate your outlook on why you podcast and who's it for. I wish there was more individuals with your perspective out there. I only recently dipped my toe into the DDG podcast, and I have to wonder why I didn't listen sooner. I knew it was there, and I knew it needed to get around to listening. So many other podcasts to put in my ears were vying for my attention. So glad I finally dove right in. I'm really impressed with what you do, not only in terms of the podcast, but everything involved with your family as well. Your devotion to teaching your kids is awesome. I get tired just laughing. I get tired just listening at what you accomplish. I don't know how to avoid sounding cheesy, but you inspire me to become a better person. If you're ever around Cincinnati area, I would love to drop whatever I was doing to hang out, maybe even have a adult beverage or two. Keep it real, Todd Evans. Todd, I want to say October 10th, maybe 11th, around there, is Ohio Lennox Fest, Columbus, Ohio. I believe Cincinnati is not too far out of the way. Typically, when I go to Ohio Lennox Fest, I arrive on, I want to say, Thursday, and I'm there till Sunday. So what I'm thinking of is either trying to stop by Cincinnati on Thursday or on Sunday. And trust me, if we have an adult beverage, I'm paying, damn it. Yeah, and I'll say, Todd, my kids, I tell you what, man, there is so many things I think it's going to be near impossible for me to actually explain to my kids and have them really truly grasp, understand, and keep it, you know, for life kind of thing. Because if I explain something to them that they forget, what's the point? But there's a couple things. It's their definitions, because one of the other beliefs I have is we all acknowledge Webster's, Oxford English dictionaries, whatever. Okay, some kind of official standard of definitions of words, but we all have our own definitions of words, and they all sway at least a touch from those official definitions in one shape, way, or form. Some people's definitions sway a lot. You know, that's just how they are. That's human nature. One of the things I'm trying to get my oldest son right now to grasp is the differences between belief, facts, and truth. Because in human experience, our day-to-day, our life, our, you know, friendships, relationships, experience with other people, I think to some degree, those three things are different. Beliefs are just things that you don't put any research into. They just are what they are. Like when I sit down, I believe I'm not going to go through this chair. When I pick up my cup, I believe the bottom is not going to fall out. And we don't actually spend much time thinking about it not being a realism in our life. It's just a belief. It's just what it is. It's just what it is. It's just what it is. And that's what it is. And everybody's beliefs are different. And one thing I'm trying to get him to understand is to acknowledge what is his own beliefs, thus hopefully making him a little bit more respectful of other people's beliefs. I think one of the things I did when I was younger, at least, was I was a little bit too quick to call out someone's belief as being what I consider to be foolish or foolhardy or just dumb to a degree. I was not the most socially inept person. I was very poor, and I'm sure there were a great many things that I said that were wrong to people, and a great many behaviors I did that were just, you know, uncouth, rude, insulting, bad tact, however you want to put it. So I'm just trying to get him a little bit more aware of social behavior, social norms, and understanding people's beliefs are their beliefs. There's no sense in trying to convince someone what their belief is. There is almost no sense in trying to have someone change their belief. Their belief is their belief, and that's their belief. All you can do is talk to people about it and try to maybe come to an understanding of how they came to their beliefs. But to change someone's beliefs is not something I would consider he needs to make a priority kind of thing. If it turns out he has charisma and he actually can influence people to make what he thinks is smarter decisions, so be it. But for right now, let's just play the odds and say he's not. Then you have facts. Facts to me are universally agreed upon beliefs. And by universally, I don't mean every single person on the planet, because come on, there are people that marry goats, okay? There are people that believe all kinds of crazy stuff. So we have to just stick with what we consider well-accepted facts. If I, you know, somebody charges me $4.50, I give them a $5, I get 50 cents back. Simple math, I consider to be a fact. That's just what it is. It's what it is. It's what it always will be. It's what it always should be. It's math. And then there's facts, which it's okay if it's not right in front of you and you try to make it right. It's a fact. It's something that we can all agree on. There, and facts to me are almost the slimmest one of these three things, because it's the fewest things I think people can agree upon are these facts. Because like one of the things I hate about like clickbait headlines and facts and normal people's conversation and facts are almost everything stated has to come with a caveat that it people never mention. Just a quick couple for instances. A study said 70% of the people in New York believe that they were smarter than the average New Yorker. Well, logically, they're averagely smart as the average New Yorker. That's what the word average means. It means average. So if someone asks you, are you smarter than the average person in your town? The odds are no. You're exactly around the same intelligence. That's what the word average means. The West Virginia school teachers, they were among the lowest paid teachers in the nation. There's many more, many more facts that are needed. But let's first start with they're among the lowest paid teachers in the nation. Is that bad? Because somebody has to be the lowest paid. Somebody's always the lowest paid. Somebody's always the most paid. Somebody's always the average paid. Somebody will always be the lowest paid. It doesn't matter. Being the lowest paid is not alone justification for a pay raise. There's a lot of other things to take into consideration. Is this, I mean, do different states equate their numbers differently? Are some of them by hour, some of them by week, some of them by year? Do they, you know, hash out differently when you take into consideration how long someone has been a teacher? Maybe if you looked harder at the numbers, you would see with teachers with more than 8 years experience, they're among the middlest paid. These are the kinds of things that no clickbait headline and nobody screaming at the top of their lungs seem to ever go into any more detail or any more thought or any more research or any more anything. But here's the other thing. Just saying someone is the lowest paid, first and foremost, let's understand a couple things about their settings and their surroundings. One of the biggest things I think you have to look at is what is their cost of living? If they have among the highest cost of living in their area and they are among the lowest paid, well, then I'm pretty sure we should all agree something needs to change. That doesn't sound like it should be the case unless you really want to disrespect the people doing that job. But if they are among the lowest cost of living and they are among the lowest paid, is that really horrible? I mean, don't get me wrong. I love getting paid money. I really, you know, like being able to buy stuff. But just because you're the lowest person being paid doesn't mean you should deserve more money. We need to have more details. So we need to hear more facts. And it seems like my father being a cop, the one thing that causes screaming in the realm of politics since I was a kid, at least, is when someone mentions police, firemen, or teachers. The old story was here in Maryland, we had no lottery. We had no scratch-offs. We had no pick three, pick four, pick five, lotto, nothing. And back, and I want to say it was the early 80s, it might have been late 70s, the politicians justified the creation of this lottery with, this alone will fund the state schools, you know, more than it could ever need. And that was their excuse for launching the Maryland State Lottery. And I know years later, we still have schools complaining about not having enough money. So it's one of those things that I think is a great hot topic to cause emotions in communities is when you start talking about teachers, police, or firefighters. And to oppose them in any shape or form, well, then that just makes you a bad person. And that's just the way that we have structured our culture kind of thing. So when a politician says we need to raise taxes for the children, to say no makes you barbaric. It makes you mean-spirited. It makes you a bad person. So I'm not against these teachers getting more money, but let's first evaluate everything else and then see if they really are being unjustly low paid. If they are, well, then let's figure out a way to get them more money. You know, that's just like one of the examples of facts that these people just throw around. Because if I just ask my son, you know, they are among the lowest paid. Should they get more money? Human nature says, of course they should. Of course they should. And I want him to just be able to once in a while sit down and think with a little bit of a skeptical eye and just say, maybe I need more information. Maybe I need more facts. The classic example from Podnuts I use is whenever someone asks me what is the best of something, or when I hear anybody ask what is the best of this, what is the best phone to get, what is the best laptop to get, there is no best, because everybody's criteria for what is best is unique to them. So any article that says this is the best laptop you can get for under $1,000, if anyone takes any of those articles seriously whatsoever, you really need to stop looking at those things and ask yourself, what are they selling? They don't know me. They don't know what I value. Sure, they might make up some good points. Sure, they might inform you and like educate you on how to look at a product. But what they're stating typically isn't gospel. It's just their own personal belief. You know, those are things that I don't think are facts. And then you get to truths. And I mean, the first two were hard enough to try to get my kid to comprehend. Then we go to truth. And truth, to me, is almost something that's only true now. It's only true in the present tense. Through time, it changes. The truth, unfortunately, through time changes. Like, there was a truth. There, like, was a time when the truth was every single human born and died on the planet Earth. That was a truth. There is no proving that false, because it, you know, we did not get off of it. Now we have people going to space. Now we have a possibility of people dying in space, not dying on Earth. So the truth can change. It's just a matter of time. It's what period of time are you talking about? So I'm trying to get him to understand some of the just the basics of these three terms, because I do think they're very important to understanding the world you live in, the culture you're part of, the people you're around, the environments that you're in, the social engagements that you're going to have. And the most thing I'm trying to teach him through explaining those three things is shut your hole and listen. Not to me. Listen to everybody else. Nobody knows everything, and you are no different. If you're in a room with three people, their combined knowledge of any, you know, average thing will clearly be greater than yours. So even if you're in a room with a small number of people, you should be striving to listen to them, not to talk at them or over them. He's not an extremely social, comfortable fella, so I think he's going to be fine with the listening thing. But I also don't want him just sitting back judging the entire time. Because that's not healthy either. So I'm trying to get these kinds of things through to him. And I'll say this, if you listeners, Podnutsians, have any advice, guidance, tips, literature, videos, music, whatever, that you think can like typify some of these things, please shoot them my way at ddg@podnuts.com, or you can go to send me a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT. Another thing I just wanted to go over was nostalgia. And I'm sorry if this is a repeating topic. I'm never sure if I've talked about this before. But it was around 1770. Before that, the word didn't exist. Maybe it was 1867, now that I look at this page. I'm going to have this page in the notes. The word did not exist before that date and time. Whatever it is, 1770, 1860, it doesn't matter. Time is irrelevant in this discussion. All you have to know is there was a time it didn't exist. And then there was a man suffering from nondescript symptoms of illness, rashes, fevers, stuff like that. And they could not find any cure to his disease. So they basically said, well, let's send him back. Send him to his hometown. Send him home. And every day they got closer to his hometown, the guy got better. And he kept getting better until he finally got home and all of his symptoms were gone. So nostalgia is basically another way of saying homesick. Okay, but now in today's modern usage of the word, we have to really understand it as being a cognitive bias, a kind of low level, and I don't want to say the word mental disease, you know, too loosely, but it is a type of mental impairment that we all will suffer from to some degree with age, because memory is completely flawed. For instance, when I look at my youth, I only can look through it through one lens: what I saw, what I witnessed, what I felt, what I touched, what I drank, what I smelled, what I experienced. That's a super unbelievably microscopic look at that time, okay? Which means I don't have any clue, I have no clue whatsoever of how it felt to be a first generation import from Korea or a first time resident from Vietnam coming into the US or a first time resident from Africa into the US. I have no idea what their youth was like. I have no idea how they were treated. I have no idea what they felt. I have no idea what their experience was, what they tasted, what they smelled, what they felt, what they believed, or anything. So for me to take my myopically small, narrow viewpoint of that period of time and to say it was better then is unbelievably distorted. And the only other word that comes to mind is like delusionary. It is unbelievably incorrect. It is unbelievably incorrect. So when I hear people say to me how, oh, it was so much better back here, it was so much different back then, I had, you know, it was so good back then, the first thing I always say, without trying to be rude, is, well, maybe for you, congratulations, you won the lottery. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, because there were plenty of people back then it wasn't good for. I want to say it was Neil deGrasse Tyson. It might not be. It's one of those things. The memory's flawed, like I just said. I'm pretty sure I remember just saying. Neil deGrasse Tyson said, time travel right now. If you take a random sampling of people all over the world and you tell them they're going to go in a time machine back in time, the only person who would look forward to a, in quotes, good time is white males. Because everybody at some point in time in the past had much less rights, privileges, freedoms in a lot of different cultures over the world. I mean, hypothetically, you take an Asian man, put him back 200 years in the U.S., A, he would have stuck out like a sore thumb, but B, he would have been treated quite poorly, quite poorly. So for people to say it was better when I was a kid, I really have to ask people to stop, and put in that one extra caveat, that one extra bit of information that completes the actual statement. It was better for me when I was a kid. It was better for my family when I was a kid. You can even say it was better for your neighborhood when you were a kid, but it sure in the hell was not better for everybody. Nostalgia is a affliction that when you are aware of it, it doesn't mean you don't enjoy it any less. Okay. When I look back and at my youth going to see Disney, when I think of the days playing Tron Deadly Disc on the in television, when I think of getting that HP multimedia computer with the DX multimedia co-processor in it, that is good. It felt good. It was fun to do that stuff. Does that mean everybody had the same kind of niceties? Does that mean everyone had the same kind of good experience as a kid? Absolutely not. Hell no. Those things for me were great. That doesn't mean everybody else in the world should understand that, respect that, and think the same as I think. Nostalgia is deadly. You know, if you try to convince the wrong group of people that this country was fantastic back in the 60s or the 70s or whatever, the odds are it wasn't for them because of either cultural bias, racial bias, sexual bias. I mean, you got to remember the movie 9 to 5, which was about women trying to get their own in the workplace. You got to understand, back in like the 70s and 80s, that was real. I mean, my mom worked in a government institution, and I saw firsthand people, men, management supervisors, treat her like not one of the boys, because she wasn't. She was a woman. So, I mean, I understand people thriving to have some of their own history back. I understand people desiring to have that feeling that they had when they were younger. But it's not the same for everybody. Change is the only inevitability that we have absolutely no chance of stopping. Change is happening. Change will always happen. Change will change when you least want it to. All you can do is try to embrace it, try to like it, and then if you can, influence your own change. Try to make something a little bit different, better than it is now. Whether that means you're going to go talk to your congressman or senate or mayor or governor, or you're just going to try to talk to people in a group and just see if you can get people to agree with you on something. That right there is change. That right there is change, and it can be significant. But don't try to reverse time. Trying to reverse time is impossible. You are fighting the unbelievably hopeless battle. I say to my wife, I'm only going to get one chance in my life to go back in time and relive some of my youth. And that's if I become delirious, get Alzheimer's, and play the NES again. And it will be like the first time I played it, because I don't remember any of it. And that's it. And that's not a fun time, people. You know, it isn't. So don't wish for things to be the way they were. Wish and work towards making things better than they are now. That's the only way to go. And I'm trying to get my kids to at least be positive about the future, because you have to be. You cannot be doom and gloom. You cannot be the world sucks. You cannot be kids these days. You cannot be, you know, you're like, you know, no matter what happens, you're going to have it so hard kind of thing. Because we had things hard as a kid. Today's kids have just as much things that are hard. Okay. Nothing is easy. Nothing is easy. If it was, it wouldn't be called life. It would be called fun. Life is not easy. Life is not fair. We have to make the most of it. Make friends when we can. Try not to make enemies, and just do what we do. Be productive when you can, be positive when you can, and when you have to be negative, as quick as you can, notice that you're being negative and try to stop it, because you're helping nobody. And I suffer from it just as bad. I was leaving work today for an impromptu dental emergency. My youngest one has a dental like bridge for on his upper teeth, going from the back right to the back left across the upper teeth. And it's basically like a ball, a hollow ball with holes everywhere in it, trying to stop him from sticking his fingers in his mouth and to stop him from his tongue pushing his teeth forwards, because he has an overbite. It came loose at work, at school or something. I don't know. The school called, extremely overreacting and extremely being over dramatic about it and completely over exaggerating what was going on. So I immediately left work. So I was in not the best attitude as I was leaving work. And I got in the elevator, pushed the button down, got down about halfway, and then the door opened up. Wasn't the ground floor yet. I still had more floors to go. And then someone walks in the elevator and she says, well, I'm going to 4. And I said, well, we're going down. And I didn't say it meanly, but I almost said it sharply and meanly. And she said, oh, and got off the elevator. And I really instinctively wanted to be that jerk, because that's what human nature is. It doesn't matter what we think. It matters what we do. And I seriously, for a split second, if this was 10 years ago, I would have said, you see the little arrow, the little light on the outside there lit up that's pointing down? That means this device is going down. But I didn't. And to be honest, I'm happy I didn't, because I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that jerk. Not being a jerk is something I will admit publicly is a lot of work, a lot of self-restraint. I'm most comfortable speaking in public when I'm confident about my words. And unfortunately, when I'm being rude to someone, it also is when I'm confident, because I have little doubt in what I'm saying because I know it to be true. That arrow pointing down means we're going down. Yeah, I know that to be a truth, a fact, not just a belief. You know, it's a truth. That light is lit, that arrow is pointing down, that means I'm going down. But I didn't. And I'll say I am exercising that as much as I possibly can. I think I've been actually fairly good. The last time I went belligerent was over a year ago, clearly over a year ago now. I was in a meeting with a guy, and I've had history with the guy, and I basically asked him if he had any testosterone, which of course you shouldn't do in a meeting, but I did. Afterwards, he's been there for years and years and years. I've been there for years and years. So we both just, like, I said, you know, I was wrong in saying it. Shouldn't have said it. I should have said something different. But I really would have thought by now you would have at least respected the words I said for it not to get that far. And I'm really disappointed that you didn't, which was maybe one of the most adult things I could have said. And he acknowledged that he wasn't in the right, but I said, but I was more in the wrong. There's no doubt about that. I was much more in the wrong. So I admitted that. And, you know, since then, he stops, tells me about his watch. I tell him about my phone. He's a bit of a nerd. I'm a bit of a nerd. You'll have that. His social skills maybe aren't the best. Neither are mine. So once in a while, we have those kind of encounters and meetings. But that was well over a year ago at work. And I've tried to be better, at least at work. Now I've just got to pull it out the rest of the way. And I will say, when I'm with my kids, I almost can't be a jerk. And it's like, you know, some mental switch is clicked. Like, I remember my dad, the only time I ever saw him even, like, visibly upset. Only one other time I saw him visibly upset. And it must have been just everything else coming down on him, everything else piling up, everything else building up, until this one thing. We were walking up to the Price Club, Costco's, BJ's, wholesale club, membership needed to get in the door kind of thing. And it was like Saturday or Sunday. It was a weekend. And we were pulling up at like 9 or 10 in the morning. And we got out of the trucker van, I believe van, him and me and my brother, I believe it was. Maybe me and my sister. And we started walking up. And then at the door, you have to show your card to get in back then. So he showed his card. And the guy said, "You can't come in here." My dad said, "What? I pay my membership fee." And he said, "Well, yeah, but it's only open to business members until 11 or something like that." And it was literally only like 10 minutes away. And he cussed in front of us. And I remember thinking, Steve, you better be on your best behavior all day, because this man is ready to blow. And that was the only time I remember him cussing in front of me when I was a kid. Or getting like physically, visually upset. When I was a little bit older, I did see him get upset one time when my brother didn't realize he was home. And my brother called my mother a female dog. And then the bathroom door opened up and he walked out in his uniform, you know, ready to go to work. And I remember my dad picked him up off the ground. Every wall in the house was made out of concrete, put him on the concrete wall with his feet dangling from the air, turned to me and said, "Don't you have some place to be?" "Yes, sir, I do." And I just picked up my stuff and walked out and didn't want to know what was going on. What was going on was between him and the boy who thought he was a man, my brother. You know, so, and it's like the same thing with my kids. I don't want them to see me mad. I don't want them to see me irate. I don't want them to see me be a jerk. So I think it's also affecting the rest of my life. I'm trying to be nicer to everyone along the same, you know, paths kind of thing. Really quick, I will say I have unsubscribed from more than a couple podcasts here in the last couple weeks. But with that said, I am still subscribed to 148. So I picked up a couple and I dropped a couple. Wow. I first want to say I want to thank Paco LeBron for taking over Podnuts Daily. We are going to rebrand that show to be called Tech Life. I literally just changed the artwork on it. I changed, I believe, the feed burner title of the podcast, which might honestly, unfortunately, take a little bit to come through. But now I'm going to have to talk to him about what needs to change on the website. So I got to thank him for that. Most of the podcasts I have unsubscribed from in the last week are just because their ads are so unauthentic, have nothing to do with the content that's being created, or I just think they're, you know, bad, just bad. If you break the natural flow of the podcast, insert some audio clip of an ad, and then do a fake intro back like you're on the radio, and then finally get back into the conversation, it to me is unbelievably unprofessional, and it's almost insulting to waste the listener's time that much. If you want to do an ad, do it the way the professionals do it. Right then and there, say, now we're going to stop for an ad spot, and then naturally just talk about it. If the person you're talking to, if the person on that podcast does not have the decency to wait for you to finish that, or maybe say some positive words about the ad, then maybe your listeners shouldn't be put through it either. So they're just ones that are bad. The one podcast I'm going to mention again, I'm going to have a link in the notes to it. It is podcast is You Are Not So Smart, which I did bring up before. The one episode I want to mention, though, is episode 62, Naive Realism. Whew, man, this to me is one of those cognitive biases that I think a lot of people need to listen up on, is what I'm going to say. Here's the description of the podcast, or at least some of it. In psychology, they call it naive realism, the tendency to believe that the other side is wrong simply because they are misinformed. According to Lee Ross, co-author of the new book, The Wisest One in the Room, naive realism has three tenets. One, you tend to believe that you arrived at your political opinion after careful, rational analysis through unmediated thoughts and perceptions. Two, since you are extremely careful and devoted to sticking to the facts and thus free from bias and impervious to persuasion, anyone else who has read the things you have read or seen the things you have seen will naturally see them the way that you do. Here's the example to it. There was an old Greek, and this is breaking from this. There was an old, I believe, Greek term that came to be proven completely and utterly wrong. It was the belief that if everybody in the world had the exact same education and the exact same facts placed in front of them, we would all come to the same conclusion. And that is unequivocally, absolutely wrong. Because every single time we read something, every single time we see something, every single time we hear something, all of our pre-existing biases, all of our experiences, all of the thoughts, and all of the little things going into that one event are going to shape how we see it and what we believe from it. You can show two desperate sides the exact same facts, and they will pull two different pieces of information from that same facts, twisting them, bending them, sculpting them to meet their narrative. It's just a fact. The one example in the podcast was simple math problems. They gave the same group simple math problems with non-political things in them. And they took like three or four of them and they saw, well, they were right 68% of the time. They were then thus wrong 32% of the time, blah, 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 and documented all this out and found out the averages. Then they knew who was like a pro-gun person, who was an anti-gun person, and they used the exact same math formulas and functions in a word problem, but then they substituted some of those facts with either pro-gun things or anti-gun things. And the pro-gun people got the pro-gun things wrong in favor of their belief, and the anti-gun people got the anti-gun math wrong in their favor. So there was a bias that maybe they didn't even realize that made their math incorrect to thus support their belief. And it goes on and on and on. There's a whole bunch of studies. This is a guy, I will say, I really do enjoy his podcast, but there's few podcasts I feel like I have to listen to more than once. Sometimes I gotta listen to his podcast more than once because he does go pretty deep into things. I will have a link in the notes to this exact episode. I think it's really good stuff. And here's like a silly one that I'm going to put a link to. They do, I mean, both of them have ads and sponsors. I do believe the You Are Not So Smart, there is a paid feed where you get no ads. This one, I do believe they have ads, but they're not very much and they're not very long. This one's called The History of Fun by Polygon. There's no way to explain this except say it's the history of fun. It is what it sounds like. They go over stuff from the origin of the game Monopoly, the origin of Chuck E. Cheese, the origin of Dodgeball, what is the history of Super Mario Kart, Beanie Babies, N-Gage handheld gaming system, Jump Rope, Poker, Mr. Potato Head. They only have, it looks like, 16 episodes. So if you want to, you can go back and listen to them all. Honestly, I think it's just a good one. Now here's two things I'm going to also give. Looking through my podcast attic, let's see what these numbers look like, because everyone wants to know what numbers are. You Are Not So Smart podcast addict says 104,000 subscribers. Oh my goodness. Maybe I don't have to tell you people about this episode or this show, because everyone already knows about it, apparently. And the other one, History of Fun, let me go to that one. Only 16 episodes again, 1,000 subscribers. So yeah, two basically completely different shows. You Are Not So Smart has at least 122 episodes. A couple of them are repeats, where he literally rehashes the same episode with sometimes some new information set into it. And really quick, just want to talk about Nintendo Switch. There is no way I can say this clear enough. $300 console, hybrid handheld console, and a dockable big screen TV console with what I can only classify in my own bias, limited experience, really good dynamic controls. The Joy-Cons do appear to be small, especially when you first look at them, but they're quite usable. I love the fact that if you're out and about, there's more than a couple games. You can take the Joy-Cons off, hand one to somebody else, and you can play a two-player game with that person right there. When you have it docked to your TV or on the go, you can use your Pro controller, which is much more of a normal, classically sized, full-size gamepad with dual sticks and all the extra buttons kind of thing. It, to me, is a very, very clear look at Xbox and Sony, really, to be quite honest, not understanding games whatsoever. If they were beer, they would be Budweiser. You know, they don't understand beer at all. Their beer's made out of rice. It sucks. It's horrible. They sell a hell of a lot of it, but it doesn't mean it's good. I will say same thing applies. Microsoft and Sony sell a hell of a lot of gaming systems, and there is some very good games on that system. There's also some very bad games on those systems. And, you know, if their only interest is teraflops and muscle and horsepower, then you're forgetting that people are playing games. The fun of the game is why people play games. Unless you are literally just a pixel junkie, or you just want to play first-person shooters and have less lag than the other person. To me, those people aren't gamers. They used to have the tag of hardcore gamers. To me, they're not hardcore gamers. They're not even gamers. They're off on their little island, as far as my brain is concerned, which, of course, is the majority in actuality. But from my viewpoint, they're off on some little island playing these irrational, unbelievably limited, look at somebody, bang, bang, shoot, shoot, okay, great, whatever. Those games are rarely about actual strategy. and they're more about just making the other person mad, which is why my kids will not have a Sony or a Xbox, nor will they have any kind of headset to be called every name in the book by every other kid all over the U.S. It ain't going to happen, period. Nintendo, if they do have an online system, I still don't think I'm going to get my kids a headset unless I witness many hours of being on that headset and I actually hear respectable people on the other side. You know, I don't sit my kids in the middle of a strip club. I don't sit them in the middle of a ghetto. I don't sit them in the middle of drug deals. I'm not going to sit them in the middle of Xbox or PlayStation online communications. I think they're equally as bad. The games for Nintendo are very psychological, very cerebral game design as far as I'm concerned. There's a reason why Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild was Game of the Year. To be honest, from everything I saw, everything I heard, everything I witnessed with my own eyes, it destroyed every game last year. Yeah, there was a couple other games that looked good. Zero Dawn, I believe, was or something. There's a couple other games that looked good. Yeah, sure. But none of them had the cerebral aspect of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And if you're not a Zelda guy, you might not like this game. But if you're not a Zelda guy, you might actually like this game because this is enough of a difference. Super Mario Odyssey, wow. So I got to say, unbelievably good. Super Mario Kart 8, if you want to play a competitive game, there you go. There's a competitive game. Splatoon, if you want to do shooting, even Nintendo can pull off third-person shooters where they're not bloody and gory and snipey and just mean-spirited. Splatoon, very healthy, fine game. Good game. Really good game. If you want to do fighting types games, ARMS is still very highly revered. If you want to play Rocket League, it has that. If you want to play Doom, it has that. Diablo 3 is coming to it. It has that. More and more developers have no choice. Doesn't matter what they think. Doesn't matter what they feel. Doesn't matter what they believe. They have no choice. If they want to sell numbers, they're coming to the Switch. The independent third-party small guys came on the Switch and were unbelievably successful. Even if the game was 3 years old or 4 years old, they said when they brought their game to the Switch, they saw bigger numbers than on those other platforms. Okay, those other platforms, in my opinion, are almost elitist platforms for elitist people with elitist attitude looking for elitist games. Sure, you're going to have an indie guy once in a while show up in the Xbox arcade or whatever, then they're going to do really good and they're going to get some rub. They're going to get some fame off of it. But if you really want to reach the mass market, Nintendo has proven time and time again, they are able to reach more people because they have friendlier gaming consoles with friendlier games on it for a bigger spectrum of people. If I want to pick up the Nintendo Switch and play classic Double Dragon from the arcade, I can do that. If I want to play old-looking games like Celeste that are much more NES classic-like, I can do that. If I want to play old arcade games, Neo Geo games, I can do that. If you want to play something brand new, more and more games are coming out every day, month, whatever, on the Switch. They have over 400 games in the first year. It was the number one fastest selling console in the history of video games in North America last year. It's hard to compete with that, is all I'm going to say. It's really hard for somebody to compete with that. Xbox will not go away. Sony will not go away. The diehard PC Master Race will not go away. There will always be games for those systems. There will always be people playing those games. But to be honest, I like having a more friendly ecosystem with the Nintendo Switch. I am very confident if I have my kid with a Switch at a restaurant playing, there's a chance he's going to see another kid playing on a Switch and they can do some kind of like competitive Mario Kart race or something right there and have a good, dare I say this word, wholesome time where they don't have to worry about cussing at each other. They don't have to worry about obscenities going back and forth. They can literally just enjoy playing a game for a game. If the games don't have gameplay, they're not games. They're activities or they're first-person shooters. Multiplayer death matches are very shallow, in my opinion. Surely they can be fun. Anything can be fun. You can tie a turd to a stick and make it fun. Doesn't mean I got to play with it. So I encourage everyone, if you are a classic gaming fan or even a casual gaming fan, get your hands on a Switch in a store or someplace else. You can look at the videos online of some of the games, and I guarantee you, you'll find at least one or two you find that could be pretty interesting. I am kind of shocked the number of mobile games that I reviewed on AAA in the last year that I'm seeing coming over to the Switch, and I'm being as quiet about them as possible. I want to see if someone else brings them to me and say, hey, have you heard of this game? Hey, look at this game. This game's pretty cool. Because I do believe at least a couple of them will end up being more successful because you have much more captured audience, much less competition. On mobile, the competition's insane. And, you know, everyone wants to fight for the micropayments. Everyone wants to fight for the ad revenue kind of thing. Like one of the games I still haven't bought is Gear Club Unlimited, which was a mobile game that if you bought everything through all the micropayments would have cost you like $90, some high number. On the Switch, it came out, I think, $45. You can get it now for about $40, where you buy it once, boom, you have everything. There's no micropayments. There are things you have to earn through playing it, but you just earn through playing it. There's no pay-to-win structure. And that developer also stated he saw great success on the Switch. So I'm actually interested to see what games will make that jump. If you are a diehard PS4 Pro or VR this fan, congratulations. Enjoy your system. Again, there are beliefs, there are facts, and there are truths. I believe right now the Nintendo Switch, listen to the caveats, is the most dynamic gaming platform you can play right now. Portability, and yet playing on your TV. It has the broadest spectrum of games that I've seen on a single system in a long time, and it has some pretty dang quality games. Some of the, I mean, game of the year. Hard to deny that, game of the year. So if you have a Switch and you have a favorite game out there, let me know what your favorite game is. I don't think I'm going to Linux Fest Northwest now. Just a short thing. We had like a group of four or five people. One of the people lost, got stolen from him, multiple thousands of dollars worth of stuff. He has to now replace all that. He has no money. He ain't going. We had Repair Tech be a long time sponsor, something I didn't have to think about. They merged with another company. Right now they're reevaluating their market strategy, their social marketing strategy and stuff. So right now they're not a sponsor on Podnuts either. So I'm not sure if I'm going to go to Linux Fest Northwest right now. I have to lean towards no. But every time there's a bad thing, there's a good thing too. I'm looking at buying soon some sort of HDMI capture device. The logic is I can record my mini PC desktops, whether it be my ROG 64, my Odroid XU4, Raspberry Pi, Odroid, Pine 64, chip, anything else. And it won't affect the desktop performance. So I can record it all I want and you'll see the actual speeds on it. Technically speaking, I could also stream the Switch with that as well. I will say the more feedback I get on either of them, the more I will do one over the other. Right now, I do have a genuine desire to want to do some mini PC streaming just because I think it's needed. I think people need to see them in action, see how they work, see their shortcomings, and see what they can do. So I'm going to look at buying one of them here soon. Looks like I can get a Linux-compliant USB 3 HDMI capture device for about $100. If you know of a one out there, one that's really good that costs more, or one that's just as good and costs less, let me know, ddg@podnuts.com. Please, I do implore you, any and all feedback is welcome. The more feedback I get, the more frequently I will do this. Next week, I'm going to be out of town. Family's going down to Florida, and I'm driving again. So I will be back, I believe, on the 17th, March the 17th, somewhere around there. Yeah, that sounds right. I want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for looking at the other podcasts that I mentioned. any and every time you discover a new podcast, because I mentioned it, please do not hesitate to let the other party know that you heard about it on Podnuts, one of the most podcast-friendly networks that exist. Thank everyone a lot, and I will talk to everyone next time.
My name is Jeff Houch. I am the host of Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast, where we take live calls on the air to answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.